behalf of all of our readers for agreeing to this interview. Sorry to disturb you.
So I would like to ask you the first question, which is, can you tell us something about your meeting Srila Prabhupada for the first time? How did it?
Okay, I met Srila Prabhupada in 1970 in June in San Francisco. It was the time for Rath Yatra, and it was a very big Rath Yatra, so devotees came from all over America, mostly from the West Coast, but even from New York and Boston and other places. So I was at that time staying in the temple in Vancouver in Canada, which is on the West Coast. So we came down in a group to San Francisco, and I was also going to take initiation at that time. I had already been living in the temple for some 8 or 9 months or something. So we were talking so much about Prabhupada and how one wanders throughout the universe for millions of years. Brahmanda Brahmite means to wander throughout the Brahmanda. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev. When someone becomes very lucky, he gets the chance to associate with Krishna's pure devotee, Guru Krishna Kripai Pai. He gets the Kripa, the mercy of Krishna, to meet a pure devotee, and his spiritual life begins. Bhakti Lata Bij, the seed, the bija of spiritual life, was planted in his heart. So like that, I was thinking, oh, I've been wandering for millions and millions of years, and now I'm getting the chance to meet Krishna's pure devotee. So I was very excited. And it was Friday night. We were in the temple on Frederick Street, which is in the center of the hippie district in San Francisco. It was called Haight-Ashbury. And so it was a small temple, but there were about 200 devotees hanging from the ceiling and hiding in the corners, and everywhere there were devotees, just completely packed. And Prabhupada was supposed to be coming to give the evening lecture, and the next day was Rath Yatra. So we were waiting for his arrival, and kirtan was going on, and then someone came in the temple and said, Prabhupada is coming, Prabhupada is coming. So then the kirtan got going faster and faster, and we were all dancing and jumping, and I was thinking, now, after millions of years, and then the door opened and Prabhupada walked in. And everybody fell to the floor, just like a stick. Everybody fell flat. And I was offering my obeisances, and all around me there were bodies lying on the floor offering obeisances. But I was crying also, because I felt so lucky, Bhagyavan. And I felt, as I was crying, I felt Prabhupada reach out and touch my heart, and for a few minutes I felt completely clean. I had never had that feeling before in my life. And when I got up, I saw that Srila Prabhupada was very small. He was only 5'6". And he was old, but he looked very, very beautiful. And as he walked from the door towards the temple Vyasasan, devotees were jumping here and there to get out of his way. But I saw him as if we were all covered by a bubble. I could see some kind of bubble around all of us. And wherever Prabhupada walked, that bubble moved back. It receded. So he was outside the bubble. We were in a bubble of illusion, I guess you could say. See, I was completely amazed by seeing him, and he got up on the Vyasasan and he started to lead kirtan, and everything was so beautiful. I was feeling so happy. And then he started to lecture, and he made some mistake. Mistake means he quoted some verse and he forgot the Sanskrit. And then he coughed. And then my mind started to find fault. And then immediately the bubble burst and my vision was finished. So I've never quite experienced that feeling again. One time I had that feeling after Prabhupada left, when we installed his murti in our Bombay temple. I was always thinking that Prabhupada has left, but he couldn't leave us for good. Maybe he will come back. Sometimes a spiritual personality whom people are attached to dies, or leaves, or something. And people think, well, maybe he will come back. I can't believe he's gone. So I was thinking like that about Prabhupada. And it was 1 year, and still Prabhupada had not... I thought maybe he would descend from Vaikuntha, and I don't know how he would do it, but I'm a rational person. I'm not a fool. But still in my mind and my heart, I was waiting for some miracle. And then as we installed this murti on Prabhupada's Vyasasan, we had a huge kirtan, and it was a very ecstatic festival. And when we brought Prabhupada's murti from the altar to the Vyasasan, I was chanting and dancing and jumping and shouting. And then I realized Prabhupada has come back. And I had a very, very nice feeling that Prabhupada is still with us. So those were two very strong impressions I had.
Next question is about your taking sannyas. I mean, how does this feel? How did you decide to do it? And especially being so young, how is this?
My which?
My taking sannyas.
Taking sannyas. Well, I don't know. First of all, when I was young, I was, believe it or not, but I was always very shy. People can't believe it, but I was always very shy. And I never went out to parties. I always stayed at home and did a lot of reading. And my father was also a military man. He had been in the Second World War, and he was very strict. So I also played a lot of sports when I was young. Football, what you call football, soccer, wrestling, long distance running, baseball, sometimes hockey, many sports. So that kept me out of trouble a lot. Sports are good for young men. And somehow, right up to the time I entered college, I was quite, relatively speaking, clean. I was shy, and I had so much engagement, I had no time for getting into mischief. Then when I went to college, there was a lot of pressure on me to be normal. So for about 1 year I tried to be a hippie and actually left school.
What college did you study?
Yeah, I was taking engineering and at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada. I was always, in high school, I was always at the top of my class, mathematics, English, and Latin. Subjects that I liked. There was no trouble, but I didn't like school. I saw no purpose to it. I knew that I would get an education, get a job, get a family, get old, get a summer home in Kirk, and then die, like everybody does. No meaning in their lives. They simply work until they're old, and then they go somewhere near the beach and live until they die. What is the use in that? I didn't want to be like that. So I left school for 1 year to travel, to see the world. Then I came to San Francisco because everybody was going to San Francisco with flowers in their hair.
There's that song.
If you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. Yeah. So I did that. But from early childhood, I always had a strong interest in spiritual life, and when I joined ISKCON, I was actually very happy to be a disciplined brahmachari. My father got me engaged from the time I was 14 years old. I was in the military cadets. So I was always going twice a week to the armory Corps cadet for drill training, and I was at summer camp. I was always going to the Army summer camp. And so I liked discipline. So it was natural for me. In 1971, I almost got married. I thought maybe I should marry. And so I asked the temple president, and he arranged for a very good devotee. But she said that she wanted to think about it. And in that time, I changed my mind. And I went on traveling with book distribution. So then I came to India, and I had association of many sannyasis, and I actually wanted to take sannyas in 1974, but Prabhupada said no. Then again in 75 I asked, and he said yes. And I think living in India helped me to maintain my sannyas, because there's a little culture left there. It's a little harder in the West, but you know, personally, I'm more interested in spiritual life than I am in making a life of sense gratification. I'm already dead. I feel like I'm dead to material life. I have no ambition. So what is the use in getting married and getting entangled? If you're going on a long journey, and I do travel long journeys, I know how much trouble it is to take extra luggage. It's really a problem, extra luggage. You have to pay extra luggage money, or you have to try and sneak your luggage onto the carry-on luggage, and it's such a problem. Better to just travel light. So the same with spiritual life. Prabhupada said all the women should be married and all the brahmacharis should remain single. So then they asked Prabhupada, how can we do that? And Prabhupada said, that is your management. You have to figure it out. So there are some men who will remain single. It's not for everyone. Kiva vipra, kiva nyasi, shudra kene noi. Jai Krishna Tata Veta Sai Guru Vai. It doesn't matter whether one is a sannyasi or a grihastha or anything. We should try to learn the science of God. That's grihe tako, vane tako. Whether you're in your griha or you're in the vana, vrindavana, in the forest. Sada hari bole dako. Always chant the holy name. So most of our acharyas were married. Bhaktivinoda Thakur even had two wives. One died. And he had 10 children. Prabhupada had 5 children, I believe. One died. And he was married up till late in life. And so many of our acharyas were married. Lord Nityananda was married. But for me, sannyas is quite suitable.
Can I just go a little further and ask you, how did you feel and how did this happen that you became initiated in spiritual master in this world?
Well, I was one of the senior sannyasis, and in 1987, 1986, they decided to expand from the original 11. So there was opportunity for others. But I did not feel myself prepared to do the service. And even now, I don't feel very qualified to do the service. I have so many God brothers, I know them very well, and many of them are very qualified people. But in 1993, a number of my God brothers in Bombay were pushing me that there was not very many, there was only one person doing initiation, and they wanted some others also. So some boys were asking me, so I agreed to do it, but if I had it a choice again, I might not have done it, because it is a very big responsibility, and it is not at all what people think. It is not an opportunity to enjoy life more. In fact, if you take your service seriously, it means you double and triple and quadruple your problems in life, because you have to deal with people's problems. You promise to become their guide. So many of them are new, many of them are young, many of them are going through a period in their lives when they're agitated sexually. And to sit down and listen to them and try to guide them, and at the same time maintain your own spiritual life and do your own projects, it's a very big problem. But on the other side, it can also be rewarding. To me, it's something like having a family. I never married. I never had children. I think I probably would have been a good father, because I like children. I like people. So doing this service, and it's a service, it gives me a chance to give myself to people. It gives me a chance to share with people my little bit of love that I have. It gives me a chance to watch people grow. That's very rewarding. So there are advantages and disadvantages. Like any service, one has to be careful, because it's very clear, according to Srila Prabhupada, that you get the karma of the people that you accept as your disciple. So you have to be very careful never to think that all of this worship is for me, because I am something great. You have to always remember that these people really want Krishna, and you're just there to guide them to Krishna. That's your service. So doing that is also very difficult. We are not trained very well to do this service. Every service requires training. In fact, the GBC, we're thinking of starting some kind of guru school. to train gurus how to deal with disciples. Because there's some practical training that can help. Now we are becoming more and more careful. We do not allow sannyasi gurus, especially, to have traveling female servants. We do not allow a guru to have a single female disciple be engaged in his service. Someone else may give them work to do, but the guru himself cannot directly call, you know, Yashoda Dasi into his room and say, I want you to do this, because it's dangerous. So we're trying to be more and more careful, but we can never be too careful. We've already seen when we are not careful what the result is. So it's a dangerous service. One is risking his life by doing the service. And now they're becoming more and more strict about individual wealth, hopefully. They're going to monitor dakshina, and that dakshina will be seen as the wealth of the society, not some individual. So, in other words, if someone is thinking that I will become a guru so I can become rich and famous, we will not tolerate this. I was reading one letter by Bhakti Siddhanta to the members of the Gaudiya Mutt, and he was heavily criticizing any of the sannyasis who were interested to get name and fame while living in the mutt. He said, better you go home and hide behind your wife's sari. Better you live at home and wear dhoti, white cloth with tail in the back. He said, we will not tolerate this in the mutt.
I can ask one question, not for the interview, but just as you were speaking. I also realized that it is very difficult, and this is a big responsibility of spiritual masters. So how to avoid, I mean, I have some problem, and I know that this will be a burden to my spiritual master if I plug in with this. So how are we supposed to distinguish these things, you know, when to approach spiritual master, and, you know, how are we supposed to, I mean, not feel guilty, you know, that I'm going to just take time with my spiritual master, any very busy schedule, and
well, it depends on who your spiritual master is, but some people are more open and some people are more official, more reserved. Each person is an individual. So I think that as long as your questions are coming from your heart, and as long as your questions are made respectfully, that no one should be afraid to ask any kind of question. Maybe sometimes you'll get chastisement, then you will learn. Or maybe sometimes you'll get a very nice answer, which will be beneficial for you and for many people also. I would say, personally, that I had a lot of association with Prabhupada, but again, I was very shy to ask him more questions. Now I'm very sorry. I wish I had been more bold. Of course, Prabhupada and I had an understanding, a relationship. Living with him in India, we were always very close, all the devotees who lived in India, because he was the general in India. In the West, he allowed his disciples to make more decisions because this was their countries. But in India, Prabhupada was in charge of everything. So we had a lot of interaction. But I wish that I had been more... I wish I had taken more advantage and asked more questions. So I would have to say that it is better to ask your questions and be clear than to always have doubts in your mind. But you put the questions in a humble way and carefully word them and always speak from your heart.
And I, this is my next question actually. Living with Srila Prabhupada in Mumbai, can you tell us how this felt and you have some special...
How it felt?
Yeah, some experiences, some lila, something maybe that you
Wow. Living with Prabhupada in India was a real pleasure. Because Srila Prabhupada dealt with so many people of his age, people younger than him, but from the same background, people who had some knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, some knowledge of scripture, and Srila Prabhupada was able to preach in a very mature way, in a very philosophical way with those people. And it was really so wonderful to watch him, just to watch him, how he dealt with those high-class people. And it also gave me a vision or a deep understanding of what Prabhupada's plan was. He really wanted Indians to take up their own culture. His original plan was to come to the West, to make some disciples, and to bring them back to India to remind Indians what is their culture. And if you see today in India, we have many growing congregations around our temples of Indian devotees, family men, who are so nice. They're so regulated, they're fixed in their family life, they don't have any problems. They're enthusiastic about kirtan and preaching, and depends on, of course, who is dealing with them. But like, for example, in Bombay, Radhana Swami has his congregation there. They're all ideal people. Some are wealthy, some are mostly are just common men, factory workers, etc. But they have organized themselves in such a way that they have thousands of devotees, and they're all trained in humility, and they're trained in good qualities of a Vaishnava. And they love the ashram, they love the brahmacharis, they love to do seva, they love to join kirtan for hours. They have kirtan for hours and hours. And they go on long pilgrimages, and thousands of them, sometimes up to 1,000 people, will go on a pilgrimage to some holy place in India. Now I'm looking forward to the day when those people come to the West to preach. Then we won't, no one will be able to think of us as a cult. And these are people who grew up in their families. They accepted reincarnation. They accepted Sankirtan. They knew about everything. They were vegetarians most of their lives, or all of their lives, like that. Solid. So I I saw that was Prabhupada's plan, and I just wanted to be an instrument to help Prabhupada fulfill his plan. So I dedicated my life to preaching in India, and I'm sure one day that it will bear. Already it is having very good results. We have we're very highly respected in India today. We have temples, big temples in every major city. But it's going to grow and grow.